Welcome to episode number 5 of the Marketing Development Podcast. My name's Pete Everett and I'm your host, and today we're going to be doing something just a little bit different. Rather than interviewing a guest like we've been doing so far, I'm going to run through one of the key questions that I keep on getting asked by some of the marketing consultants that I work with, and that is, how do you optimize a page for SEO? Now, back in episode 1, we had Rob Watson, who covered some of this, and he mentioned some resources from backlinko.com and by Brian Dean. To be perfectly honest, those resources are widely known, and they have become, over the years, part of our strategy for optimizing websites for SEO. So I'll put a link in the show notes, which will be found on peteeverett.com/005. And I believe Brian has a PDF download both for keyword optimization and for keyword research. So yeah, you can go and check those resources out over there. So let's get going. I'm not going to cover how to do keyword research in this podcast. That's a massive subject on its own, and it's one maybe something that will feature as an episode on its own in a few episodes' time. But let's just say you've got your keywords, you've done your research, and you've got them mapped out to the pages of your website and the sections of your website, and you're now wanting to make those pages optimized for search engine optimization to basically get them to rank well in Google. The first thing to do is to imagine that your page is like a book. So the first place to start is with the title of the page. That's the first thing that loads. It's the thing that will load into Google when you see the little blue line in your search engine ranking. And that needs to be optimized for the keyword, the primary keyword that that page is going to rank for. Ideally, that title tag also needs to be front-loaded with that keyword. So that means that the keyword needs to appear either right at the start or certainly within the first few words of the title tag. Don't try and bolt it on at the end, because that does have a detrimental effect on your search engine position. The next thing is the URL. So if you think about the Google listing, you get the title, then in green underneath you get the URL. They ideally need to be SEO-friendly URLs. Now, if you're using WordPress, WordPress handles this pretty well itself, although the URLs can start to get a bit long if you're doing blog posts and you've included the date in there. So we'd recommend using categories rather than dates, and if possible, try and remove placeholders like /news or /blog or /latest, whatever you might call it, so just to bring that URL down as short as it possibly can be. Why does that matter for SEO? Well, again, if you think about the book analogy, the title is the big title you get on the front cover, and the URL, it's a little bit like the author's kind of strap line that you might find underneath. So it's the two key pieces of information that the search engine is using. Now, the other thing to bear in mind is that the third element you get in a Google listing is your meta description. Now, a couple of years ago, Google did announce that they weren't using meta descriptions within their ranking algorithm. However, our consensus really is that your meta description, whilst it may not affect your rank, it does give you the opportunity to improve the click-through rate from your Google listing through into your website. So it is worth optimizing that. Even if it doesn't affect your position, your position is a position in amongst a load of positions, and you have an extra opportunity to make yourself stand out. So I'd try and get your keyword and your meta description as well, but I certainly wouldn't use the auto-generated one that comes basically as a snippet from the page, because you're not then in control of what's being pulled through. The third thing we look at is how you use multimedia in your blog posts. So that could be images, it could be videos, it could be podcast recordings. Like if you go to peteeverett.com/005, you'll see that I've pulled the podcast episode through as a media snippet. It could be other things to do with that basically aren't text, so things like lists. People don't often think of lists as multimedia, but with the way Google works and the rich snippets it can pull through, lists can be a vital element of your SEO. It's one of those things that it isn't going to get you onto page one, but if you're already on page one vying for position, it's one of those borderline factors that can really help you out. So how is multimedia being used on those pages? And also, do they have the right meta tags within them. So ideally, every image should have an alt tag, and within that alt tag, at least one of the images, ideally the primary image on the page or the image that would get pulled through to social media, should also include the keyword within the alt tag. Now, alt tags are really there for screen readers, so you can't spam those tags. You can't just go and jam as many keywords in as you can. The alt tag is designed to give a description of what's in the image for devices where the image won't load. But you've got to understand that Google can't read the image. So if you can include a description of the image and your keyword within the alt tag, it does have a positive effect on your search engine ranking. The next thing to look at is the use of outbound links. Now, I can hear you saying, Pete, what the heck has outbound links got to do with my search engine position? Aren't we just helping other people with their search engine positions? And in some respects, you're right. You giving an outbound link is an inbound link to somebody else, and that will have an effect on their search engine position. However, I'm not talking about just putting outbound links to any Tom, Dick or Harry website that you can find that may say something that you agree with. The outbound links that you find need to be from authoritative sources. Now, those sources, 9 times out of 10, will have a higher domain authority than you anyway, or page authority than you anyway. So therefore, you linking to them isn't really going to help them out with their search engine position. They would need to get hundreds or thousands of links from websites of a lower authority than them to give some kind of positive impact. What creating these outbound links does, however, is, like when we get onto internal links in a moment, the internet is called the World Wide Web, WWW. And that web is formed by links, pages linking to each other. So by you creating a piece of content or optimizing a page on your website and then linking it to other authoritative sources of the same theme, the same keyword, the same business niche that you're in, or related niche, you are helping the search engines categorize your website quickly. So it's a bit of a payoff about giving a little bit of this authority that you're working so hard to create. You give a little bit of that away through a bit of link juice, but on the same note, you're helping the search engines categorize you quicker and actually establish yourself as that authority within your niche. Now, you don't want to fill every blog post or every web page with these things. Ideally, 1, 2, maybe 3 external links is far enough for you to see that positive impact. But it is something that not a lot of people do, and it can really help particularly index content quickly. Right, so we've found our external links. We've got our title sorted. We've got the URL sorted. Now, how do we get the keywords actually into the content of the page? So the first thing is it needs to be in your heading. Now, your main heading on your page needs to be wrapped in an H1 tag. So you need to get your keyword into that H1 tag. Depending on how your theme's been developed, some themes will pull the page title or the blog title through into an H1 tag, and others won't. So you'll need to, you can actually select H1. If you're using WordPress, again, there's a drop down. You can type your text in, highlight your text, and change it from a paragraph tag to an H1 tag. And that's how you would do it. You may need to talk to your developer or even just to get some advice from the group about how your WordPress theme works and which way you need to do that. Once you've done that, you then start writing. Your content then begins. Now, again, your primary keyword needs to appear within the first 100 words of your content. So that's normally within the first paragraph, certainly within the first 2, 3, 4 sentences. The purpose of doing that is to reinforce. You're now starting to build this picture. You're starting to write the chapters of your book that you're presenting to the search engines. So, you know, if you're writing a book about model railway development, you'd expect to see the term model railway appear quite regularly at the top of the book, at the start of the book. And then actually, as the book progresses, those terms may appear less frequently because you've already set the context, you already know what it's about. At this point, you are introducing the page to Google. So it is important that you include those keywords in the first 100 words. Then you need to think about how the rest of the content is structured. So ideally, you need to have one H1 tag on the page, which we've already filled with the page title or some title that's got the keyword in it. And then each subsection of the web page will then start with either an H2 or an H3 heading. Again, they're selectable within WordPress. And ideally, you need to get your primary keyword into at least one or two H2 or H3 tags throughout the page. You've set the scene at this point, so you're now starting to break that theme down into its component parts. By including the keyword in some of those headings, you're tying the subparts back to the main theme. I hope that doesn't sound too complicated. So we've got the header, we've got the title tag, we've got the URL, we've got the heading on the page, then the keyword in the first 100 words, and then again within one or two of the H2 or H3 headings through the page. So hopefully you're starting to see how, from a modular perspective, this page is now starting to come together. You're then getting onto the content. Now, when you pick the keywords for any web page, each keyword, you should ideally have a primary keyword for that page, and then that will be supported by a number of secondary level keywords. Google is intelligent enough to figure out plurals. So if you're talking about shoe and shoes, shoes isn't a secondary level keyword to shoe. That's a given. But if you're talking about shoes, and then you're talking about different types of shoes, so that could be training shoes or football shoes or shoes for going out or dress shoes, whatever it could be, they then become secondary level keywords. So that actually might inform some of the subsections that you're including within your page. So you then start to structure your content appropriately and put them into these sections, and hey presto, you've then got your page ultimately laid out, and you know things are in an SEO point of view. You'll put an image in somewhere, maybe two, you might have a list within one of your subsections. You're starting now to see what the final picture of this optimized page is going to be like. And it's at this point we then start to revisit some of the first things we did, so the title tag, maybe the URL again, just to make sure that they are as optimized as they can be. With things like your page title, you can add what's called modifiers to it. So now you've actually overviewed the whole content of the page. If we're coming at this as an external agency and we're maybe not an expert in the field, it can be that we've done some things at the start of the page just to get us going, and then we go back and revisit them at the end to make sure that now we've got a better understanding of the subject matter. This title could be modified with, I don't know, an extra keyword in there, or a bit more context or a bit more emotion. And actually, there's a tool that we can use. I'll put a link in the show notes from CoSchedule, where particularly with blog posts, you can rate those titles. So you can get a score based on the number of words that are in there, the keyword placement, how emotive it is, sample click-through rates, all of that kind of stuff. The other thing to check at this point is the length of your content. So on average, content that's on page one of Google, that's ranking in the first 10 results, has over 1,700 words per page to be in that position. Now, that sounds like a hell of a lot. And actually, there are tools out there which, for particular keywords, will scan the top 10 results and will give you what their average word count is. And in some cases, it's less than that. But ultimately, in order to rank in those positions, you need to be seen as the authority on that subject. So you need to be nailing these guys. Now, if that means you have to write 2,100 words on light bulbs or paint drying or grass growing, then that's what you're going to have to do. But if that is key to your business, it is worth the investment in the time. The final thing we then look at on the page, before we look at some of the more developer-y type things, is to do with how easy is it for this content to be shared. So the whole point of creating this page is to drive traffic to it. Now, we're optimizing it for the search engines to drive traffic from there, but that is going to take some time. So by having social sharing buttons, by linking it to your social media accounts, maybe Facebook page, Twitter account, that kind of thing, we can start to drive initial traffic to the page, which will start helping Google to understand how people react to that page. So search engine positions aren't solely based on the page content. And the other thing you've got to bear in mind is that your website should have Google Analytics on there. So Google can actually start gathering and processing data about user behavior on the page from your analytics account before your search engine position is finalized, or before it's kind of indexed this page properly. Do you have means by which people can comment? If it's a blog type post, some pages you may not want comments on, and that's fine, but you've made the conscious decision for that. And do you have the ability for this page to be shared? Now, again, some pages you may not want to have social icons on, and that is fine, but it is a decision that you need to make. From our side of things, we're trying to make things as easy for people to help drive traffic to your website as we possibly can. So it's on our list of things to watch out for. So you're now starting to get a feel of what this finalized page is going to look like. And you're at the moment where you hit publish, you maybe share it on social media. Hey, check out our new updated page on XYZ service. And off you go, and you're done. Not exactly, because there are other things that are a little bit more technical, which you may or may not be able to control from within WordPress or your content management system. And we need to understand how your website behaves in those scenarios. And the biggest one to do with this is site speed. Now, you can scan any page of your website. So if you've just got this newly optimized page, you can go over to tools.pingdom.com. I'll put a link in the show notes and run that page through a site speed checker. They've only got 3 or 4 sites across the globe, so you'll have to pick the one that's closest to you. We're in the UK and our closest one is Stockholm in Sweden. But it does give you an idea of how the page is loading from the server that it's on. And it gives you a full breakdown of how quickly the DNS loads, how quickly images load, if there's any waiting time, the overall size of the page, and then ultimately it gives you a performance grade. And you need that performance grade to be as high as it possibly can be. The other tool is Google has its own tool called Google PageSpeed Insights, and that works in a very similar way. But both of these tools give you the ability to export the data of how the page is loading. Now, it may be that you then need to go and re-optimize some images, make them a bit smaller because they're a bit big, or it may be that you notice there's a big lag on the server, in which case you may need to get in touch with your server company. If you've got something like that, that's a problem that's largely going to affect your entire website. It's not just an individual page. So if you do see that there's wait times or slow load times or things like that that aren't to do with file sizes, then you will need to speak to either your developer or to your website host in order to get those issues resolved. The next thing to do is monitor the page. So we use some position tracking software so that we can see how the page is indexed, see what position it comes into. It may be at this point that you want to go dive into your Google Search Console account and actually request a manual crawl of your website from Google. They don't have to honor that request, but you can go and request it. And sometimes it helps, sometimes it doesn't. And the other thing that has been proven to work, you know that social media network, Google Plus, that nobody ever uses? Well, there is evidence out there to show that if you publish a new piece of content on your website and then share that on Google Plus, that can also increase the speed at which your content gets indexed. So even if nobody sees it, you've just got to take it as, well, I'm spoon-feeding Google. What harm can it do? If it's going to help, it's going to help. Once you've done that, it's now time to sit and wait. By wait, I don't mean months or years, but I do mean days or weeks. And whilst you're waiting, you can maybe work on other pages of your website and treat those as individual kind of little SEO projects. Well, what you're definitely doing is monitoring your Google Analytics. And the two key metrics you're looking at on your Google Analytics are your bounce rate and your time on the page, or dwell rate, which it's sometimes referred to online. Your bounce rate is if it lands on that page and then goes straight off again. They may stay on it for a short time, but they don't engage with any other pages on your website. So they come in and then leave without visiting any other pages of your website. It's also important to understand which pages those are, because ideally you really want a potential customer to come in and maybe click around on a few pages as this shows a high level of engagement with your content. And that's what Google's wanting to deliver. The purpose of Google is to earn money through its ads. And the way it does that is by charging a premium for those ad places. And those ads are actually in competition with the organic listings that are directly underneath them. So it's trying to ascertain which content gives the most value and which websites give the most value to the visitors that click through. So this is where looking at your internal linking becomes so important. So you've written this new optimized piece of content. You've linked off to some external sources. How does this then fit into the bigger picture of your website? So it could be that this is a rewrite of an article that you did last year, looking at, I don't know, last year you did 2017's top 10 tips on marketing development. And this year we're doing 2018's top 10 tips on marketing development. And we can then link back to last year's post. You know, users that are interested in this subject can then go and read the previous piece. It may be that your service actually fits within a suite of services. So are there parent services or child services of what this thing that you're writing about? Or are there, you know, is this a service for a particular sector, but actually you have a very similar service that works in another sector, so you can cross-link that way? How does this one piece of content then knit into the mini web that is your website? So you may want to go and then revisit that piece of content and look at how those internal links are structured. That will hopefully reduce your bounce rate from each piece of content. Now, one word of warning here. Some pages do have a higher bounce rate than others, and you will never get a bounce rate to zero. Most of the websites we develop have a phone number somewhere in the header. And if a client is coming to you and what they're looking for is a phone number, they will come in on any page, see that phone number and disappear again. And that's a bounce, and it's not a bad thing. However, from that is only going to be a small percentage of users. So you're never going to get your bounce rate to zero, but you need to try and get it as low as you possibly can. Likewise, if somebody's landing on a contact page or a page that has phone numbers for service centers or that kind of thing, then ultimately those pages are going to have a higher bounce rate as well. Ideally, the page with the lowest bounce rate should be your homepage. That's normally where the majority of your traffic comes in, normally between 35 and 40% on that one page. And if you're not funneling traffic from that page from your homepage into the sub-services or subsets or categories of your website, then that page isn't doing its job. So if that page has a high bounce rate, you really need to do something about it. The next thing, as I mentioned, is the dwell time or the time on site. Now, if you've written a reasonable length of content, you know, 17, 18, 1900 words, then actually that's going to take a few minutes to read anyway. So you've probably negated this problem by writing good, deep, engaging content. However, if for some reason people aren't reading all of it, you may need to ask why. It may be that you need to restructure the content a little bit. It may be that you need to put some of your, like an index or something at the top of the page so people can jump down into different sections if it is a particularly long piece. There's different ways you can improve your dwell time. But if people aren't reading very far through it, if you can see that, you know, people are staying on a page that's got 1700 words on it and they're leaving after 24 seconds, get your stopwatch out. Start reading from line one and see how far you get at 24 seconds. That on average is going to be how far people are going. So what is stopping them going any further? And it's then about putting a little strategy in place, trying a few things. And you may not get it right first time. That's why, as I say, you need to wait, get some data, and then revisit these things. But how can you increase the dwell time on that page? Maybe you need to restructure the content a little bit. So that's basically it. Once you've then got the bounce rate down to a level that you're happy with, when you've then got the time on site or time on page to a place where you're comfortable with that, and you're starting to see some engagement, by this point you should be seeing some positive movement in the search engines. We use a tool called SEMrush or SEMrush for this, and that's a premium tool. I can put a link in the show notes, but there are free versions out there as well. There's also a piece of software called SE Ranking, which occasionally comes on AppSumo. So that's another monthly subscription thing, but actually they do occasionally dish out lifetime licenses. So if you can get hold of something like that, that's great as well. The other tools that we use are Pingdom, as I mentioned, SEM Rush, SE Ranking, then there's also a tool called Ahrefs, which is quite good. Ahrefs actually gives a very good initial crawl of a website, from our opinion. I can put links to all of those in the show notes. From an on-the-page point of view, that is really covering all of the bases. As I say, Brian Dean over at Backlinko has full resources that literally take you through this step-by-step, and it is a fantastic resource. As I said, that ultimately informed our own process that we use in our agency. There's one or two things I suppose I didn't mention, which is to do with minifying code. That is something that your developer would need to do. However, what that means is code, the way code is written, basically has a lot of spaces in it. And minifying code takes out all those spaces, crams it down as small as it can be, and that does help with your load speed. And that minifying would normally apply to CSS and to JavaScript. So if you're something's thrown up to do with that, again, you need to speak to your developer. I hope that's been informative. If you've got any questions, I'd love to see you in the group. If you go to peteeverett.com/group, or alternatively search Facebook for the Marketing Development Podcast, you can find us, hit that join button, and I'd love to see you in there. Next week, we're speaking to the WordPress chick herself, Kim Doyle. I'm really looking forward to interviewing Kim, and she's got her new product, Lead Surveys, that's just launched, so we'll be discussing that as well. See you in the group.